Hello, friends, and welcome to the Coastline Baptist Church podcast. We hope this message will equip, encourage, and edify you in your journey of life. We'd love to connect with you. Please email us at info@coastlinecc.org. And for more information about our church and our services, visit coastlinecc.org. Now let's open our hearts and open God's Word. There is something that we desperately need every single day. And it's also the same thing that we struggle to give to those around us. So there's something that all of us, every one of us, no matter who you are, no matter what you're going through, no matter what your past is, every person in the room today desperately needs what we're going to talk about. We desperately need this every single day. But it's also the same thing that personally in our lives we struggle to give out. How many remember your first job that you ever had? That first job, okay? I had a couple first jobs, I feel like. I didn't last very well at them early on. My dad was one of the hardest workers I ever knew, and for some reason, when I was a much younger man, I didn't have the best work ethic. Don't know why. Was it my dad's fault? I don't know why. I don't know. I liked sleeping, I guess. And now I never get sleep, so I'm used to it. But one of my earliest jobs I had, it was, I believe, I had it before I got married, during my engagement, but I believe I know I had it in the first year of my marriage. It was Turf Care Supply in Hatfield, Massachusetts. It was a chemical fertilizer plant, and I was a temp, and there were several temps there, and it kind of turned into more than a temporary job, even though I was still considered a temp. They tried to treat me like a, well, I'm about to say this and now I'm laughing at myself. They treat me like a full-time employee except for all the benefits. I didn't get any of those things at all. But they wanted to keep me around, so when they had to lay off the temps, when the season slowed down, like most fertilizer companies, the season slows down, they tried to keep me on as long as possible. And I really liked the job. Again, it was one of my earliest jobs, and I got to know the people well, and it was a fun job. And as a temp, even though I was a temp, and it was really supposed to be this temporary job where they just kind of had us slapping labels on fertilizer bags with a little glue machine, they ended up giving me a forklift license. And, you know, again, they kept me on during the off season. I would just be vacuuming the lunchroom. They were really kind enough. I think they knew I was a young guy, just starting out, newly married, and they wanted to, you know, keep me with a job, which was really kind of them. And we were getting ready to have our first boy. And I remember that as a forklift driver, I loved driving forklift. I really did. They had a bunch there, and they had really nice ones. And then they had this little piddly teal green, probably one of the earliest forklifts ever made. It was the old one that no one wanted to use. That was mine. They gave that one to me. And I loved that forklift. I mean, every morning I'd get to work, I'd clock in the old school way with the car, take it out, and I'd run to my forklift, and I'd zip around the parking lots and the warehouses and move pallets. And honestly, I felt like I was pretty good at it. You know, you kind of figure out how to, you know, the shortcuts and how to make work go faster. And effect. It was just fun. I enjoyed driving the forklift. Even though it was the crummiest one of the group, it was mine. It was special to me. I still have a picture of it in my phone that I look at and gaze at once. Oh, I missed that. And as the season would slow down, like I mentioned, they would keep me on. So all the other temps would get laid off, and they'd get unemployment, but they'd try to keep me on. So when it was really slow, they had me doing, like, I remember I washed the boss's truck once in the wash bay at the job. I remember one time I helped the boss move some stuff to his wife's business, and I was getting paid. It was great. And also, what they would have me do, one of the piddly jobs they'd have me do was, they'd have me get copy paper from the warehouse and then drive it across the parking lot to the front offices for all the copier, things like that. They used a lot of paper. And on the shelves in the warehouse, there was a big pallet of the big boxes of all the reams of paper, probably 30, 40 boxes on this pallet, so very, very heavy. So I would take the pallet off the shelf, bring it down, drive across the parking lot, and the way they taught me to do it was to the front of the office buildings for the fertilizer company was 4 or 5, you know, steps to a single door that led into the offices. So they taught me that I would take my pallet and my forklift, and I would lift it up and rest that pallet kind of on the second from the top step, kind of rest it on there so that I didn't have to keep going up and downstairs bringing paper in. So I did that, and I'll tell you, as a forklift driver, one of the most important things to remember that I always remembered was to make sure you always put your emergency brake on. when you stop the forklift. It was just common knowledge. I did it all the time. Except, so I bring the copy paper over and do what I told, put on the second to last step, rest it there. I mean, that's a heavy, heavy, heavy pallet. And then I'd go into the office, grab the dolly, bring the dolly back out and load like four or five boxes of paper onto the dolly and then wheel it back into the office and put it in the copy room. That's just what I did. So I got my forklift, put it in there, and I could have sworn that I put that emergency brake on. I was positive. So, because guess what? When I got off the forklift didn't move. Stayed right put. Emergency brake's got to be on. So I go inside, I grab the dolly, I come back out, and I start taking boxes off the pallet that is resting on that second to the last step from the top. And by the way, the parking lot had a slight incline leading up to those steps. Slight incline. All the employees' vehicles were parked right behind that area. That's just the way parking lots work, I guess. And I start taking off boxes, putting them on the dolly, and probably four or five boxes, which is a lot of weight, off of a pallet that unbeknownst to me was holding my forklift in place on that step. So I got the dolly filled up, I wheel it in, and little did I know that as I'm wheeling that dolly in and rolling that dolly into the copy room, my forklift is slowly rolling off that step. That pallet is much lighter now that I took all those boxes off it. And it is wheeling off that step, and I'm in the copy room unloading the boxes, and someone says, "Donald, your forklift just rolled down the parking lot into..." I said, no, it didn't. Like, I just was there. It wasn't there. And I could tell they weren't joking. So I ran out to the front, and I see that my forklift indeed had rolled off that step, had the pallet come up the step. The forks were still up with the pallet. None of the paper fell off, but it had rolled backwards through the parking lot, probably with such ease. It was a quiet, beautiful morning, and We Hatfield is right next to Springfield in Holyoke, Massachusetts, and there was in the parking lot, one of the employee vehicles was this little Honda Civic, very souped up, a lot of aftermarket parts, okay? A little mosquito flying around the rows. And that forklift connected with that little souped up Honda Civic. In addition to that, because this is a company, you know, they have a metal gate that they keep the entrance closed when no one's there. But when the employees are there, they kind of slide that gate kind of in a horizontal way, you know, in. And that gate just happened to kind of dead center right with the back of that Civic. The Honda Civic had backed in. So when my forklift came backwards, it hit the front of that Civic, which was in park, obviously. And even though it was in park, it was moved significantly backwards with the weight of that forklift into the company's entrance gate, which in turn wrapped it around like a beautiful Christmas wreath right around the back of that souped up Honda Civic. And as I stood there in the parking lot on those top steps where just a moment ago my forklift was sitting there beautifully, I thought I had the emergency brake on. It obviously didn't. And I said, maybe it's defective. No, it wasn't defective. I was defective that day. And I looked, and I, as I contemplated my job search for the next few weeks and thought about the future of my little family and how are we going to, my year and a half employee life, it's flashed before my eyes. Because the guy that I worked for wasn't just this, like, you know, really... He was an ex-Marine recon. His name was Todd. He had no neck. It was all muscles and veins. I've never seen more veins in a forehead. This guy, man, you could like stub your toe in the parking lot and you were gonna get, I don't think I've ever been cussed out more than by Todd, my old boss. God, he's awesome. I really did, he was great, but he was very intimidating. Okay? I mean, I know right now I look very physically fit. At that time, thanks for laughing, Cheyenne. I was probably like 115 pounds soaking wet, and I'm like, this guy could snap me like a twig. I mean, it was just not good. And I've been yelled at many times before for a lot less than this. Also, I was a temp. So them firing me doesn't really hurt them at all. They're not paying any severance.
And the general manager, Todd was the main guy, but right underneath him was the general manager, and he was a nice guy. He was a little bit more nice, but he said, "You need to sit in, Todd. This is a big deal, like, because this is going to be company insurance on company property with company property. It's not good. This is all bad." And so I'm sitting in Todd's office just waiting for my fate. How many cusses today? I better take a tally. This is going to be a record. And Todd, they said, "Todd's here." I see his big truck pull in the parking lot through the windows. I'm in his office. I'm like, and he walks down the hallway, and I hear the general manager, Chris, say, "Todd," he said, very, very flat. But he says, "Donald hit so-and-so's car with a forklift." And Todd just looked in the office at me and just kept walking. And I'm like, oh, he's revving up the engine. He's like priming the pump to just come in and rah, all the veins in the head, the beet red face. I'm like, I'm ready for it. And he walked by again, and he looked in, and he had this like smirk on his face. I'm like, is this guy going to go crazy? Is he going literally insane right now? And he walks by, and he says, "What's up, Crash?" What's up, Crash? And kept walking. I'm like, why is he playing with my mind right now? Like, what is happening? And guess what? For some reason, I must have caught him on a good day, because like I said, a whole lot less I had been reamed out in that day for some reason. I didn't lose my forklift license somehow. I didn't lose my job even bigger. I mean, they had to get a new gate. They had to fix this guy's car. I mean, it was a whole mess. Forklift was fine because those are pretty heavy duty. But on that day, okay, I was shown an immense amount of grace. An immense amount of grace. By that guy for more than one time. That was the big kahuna right there. But I was shown so much grace. But of all the grace that I've been shown from my boss and other bosses as well, shown a lot of grace from my parents growing up, and even as a young adult when I lived with them for a little bit of time when I was renting from it, a lot of grace shown from my parents over the years. Even more than anybody, probably, the grace that's been shown from my wife, who's been married to me for almost 15 years, that what she has to put up with, I've been shown so much grace from her. I've been shown grace even from my own children. When as a dad, I often make mistakes. I often lose my patience. And you ask any of them, and they'll say, "Yeah, Dad's apologized to us more than once." But the grace that they've shown, of all the grace that I've ever been shown, nobody has shown more consistent, more steady, more lasting grace than God, my Father. Today's message is the God who gives grace. The God who gives grace. I am who I am because of the beautiful grace of God in my life. I have been rescued. I have been set free. I have been changed because of the amazing grace of God that is daily poured into my life. He's the God who gives grace. Paul said it best in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. You can write these references down for later. There's Bibles right in front of you if you want to turn to it. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 9, Paul said this humbly. He said, "For I'm the least of the apostles." I'm the least important, that I am not meet to be called an apostle because I persecuted the church of God. We just talked about Saul's story a few weeks ago, that Paul at one time was Saul, the guy who arrested and persecuted the people of God, the people that were following Jesus. He put people in jail, he had people put to death. Saul, man, was persecuting Christians, and he says it right here. I'm not supposed to be. I'm the least of the apostles. I used to persecute the church of God and those who follow Jesus. But what does he say in verse 10? "But by the grace of God, I am what I am. And his grace, which was bestowed upon me, was not in vain, but I labored more abundantly than they all, yet not I, but the grace of God, which was with me." I am who I am because of the grace of God in my life. His grace reaches farther than we could ever imagine, beyond our sin. It's greater and stronger than our sin. His grace is greater and stronger than our past. It's greater and stronger than any anxiety that we may feel. His grace reaches farther than we could ever imagine, and it touches every part of your life. And every part of my life. He's the God who gives grace. And today, as we talk for just for a moment about the grace of God, I want to look at three areas in which God gives us grace. We'll look at several scriptures today. And at the end of today's message on the God who gives
grace, may we be reminded of the infinite, life-changing grace of God. And may that gratefulness for the grace of God in our lives drive us to serve Him more, to love Him more. And may that grace that we celebrate show in our lives to other people. Number one is this, guys. Number one, church. God gives grace for salvation. God gives grace for salvation. Ephesians 2 and verse 8 says, "For by grace are ye saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God." And verse 9 says, "Not of works, lest any man should boast." There's no better place to start than right here. The grace of God that He gives for salvation. It's where our journey of faith began. That moment we trusted Christ, that moment we received instead of rejected the grace of God for our salvation. Whether you're 8 years old or 80 years old, to experience the grace of God for salvation is something that you never forget. That's why a couple weeks ago when we were getting ready to baptize everybody, and I was talking to my youngest son, Brady, who's only 7 years old, and last year he got saved. And to be honest, with the busyness of life, I remember I had recorded what day it was, and I remember the conversation, but I couldn't remember where in our house I had talked to Brady when he trusted Christ. But I wanted to make sure that Brady understood it fully. I believe he did when he got saved, but I'm like, well, if he doesn't even remember it, I'm not going to give him false hope and false faith. And I said, "Brady, do you remember when we talked about that?" And he remembered it. I said, "Brady," he goes, "yeah, remember we were on my bed in my room." And I'm like, wow, a year later, and he remembers it. It's clear as day. Why would a seven-year-old boy with a busy, busy life remember that? Because the grace of God touched the heart of that young boy. That's something you don't forget. That's why after being saved for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you can still, in your mind, go back to that moment when you received the grace of God for salvation. I was a 10-year-old boy at Pioneer Valley Baptist Church in Westfield, Massachusetts, running the sound cassette tape recording players in the back corner of the auditorium. And I remember sitting there in those blue, they were like these seats, but a very ugly blue. And I'm sitting in those seats in the pastor. Jerry Cleveland preached the longest message probably of all time. He would set record for the length of these sermons. It was incredible. And I was somehow not asleep, probably because I was focused on making sure I changed the tape back and forth. He probably went through 3 or 4 cassette tapes. He preached long. I had to be on my game. But that day when the invitation came and the message was over and he gave the call for salvation, if you're a sinner today and you don't know Jesus Christ and you don't want to go to hell, but you want to have a relationship with God, you can be saved today. And I had heard the gospel hundreds of times. I grew up in church. And I remember that day as a 10-year-old boy, I remember it. I remember getting up from my seat and walking up to the altar and kneeling down and right and to the front left of the pulpit. And I knelt down and gave my heart to Jesus. I remember that from 25 years ago. Why? Because the grace of God visited me for salvation. His grace saved me. May our hearts, church, rejoice at the thought of God's grace that saves us from hell, that saves us from the power of sin, and saves us from ourselves, saves us from the sting of death. The scriptures say, "Oh death, where is thy sting? Oh grave, where is thy victory?" The grace of God rescues us. The grace of God saves us. Romans 5:8 says, "But God commendeth his love to us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." Grace is undeserved. It's undeserved. He came to me. I could not get to where he was, but he came to me. God gives grace for salvation. Are you glad about being saved? Mercy hit it perfect in the welcoming remarks this morning about, man, there should be joy in this house. There should be joy in the fact that we're saved. Life may not be going the way you want it to go. Things may not be working out how you thought they would, but praise God if you have Jesus in your heart. If you're a child of God, there's something to rejoice about. There's something to smile about. There's something to be happy about, that even in our darkest days, I've still been saved by the grace of God. And I have a relationship with God, my Father. And one day, whenever that may be, when I die and leave this earth, I'll spend forever and ever and ever in a place, a real place called heaven, because of the grace of God. God gives grace for salvation. But he also gives grace for sanctification.
Because as a Christian, when we get saved, it's not supposed to just stop there. And then we're the same person for the rest of our lives. Now that I'm saved, now I can do whatever I want. No, in Romans, Paul said, God forbid. Should we sin that grace may abound, or that we can put grace into action by, because now we can sin? No, God forbid. We're supposed to be changed. And it's the grace of God that changes us, that sanctifies us, that sets us apart, that makes us more like Jesus. James chapter 4 and verse 1. This book of the Bible, this is Jesus' half-brother writing this letter to Christians. And he says this in chapter 4 in his letter to the Christians here, from whence come wars and fightings among you? The church was bickering. Come they not hence even of your lusts that war in your members? Ye lust and have not. Ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight and war, yet ye have not because ye ask not. This is James chapter 4 and verse 3. Ye ask and receive not because ye ask amiss, or you're asking in vain, that ye may consume it upon your lust. He's like, you're not getting answers to prayer because you're praying selfishly with selfish motives. Verse number 4, ye adulterers and adulteresses, very powerful language here. Know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? It goes against God. Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. Do you think that the scripture saith in vain, the spirit that dwelleth in us lusteth to envy? And James is writing these Christians saying, listen, don't be like the world. And by the way, oftentimes many churches out there, they have this false definition of what is worldly. It's the way maybe that you dress or what you listen to, and they kind of make it this surface thing. But the worldliness that they're talking about in scriptures, when they say love not the world, it's a mindset. What is your heart set upon? Is it about making more money or being popular or having all the things or fill in the blank, giving into addictions? What is your mind set on? Is it set on the things of this world? Because that makes us worldly. When all we care about is what I can do for me, what I can do for my own, and that's it. That is worldliness. And James says, don't be like that. You don't want to be done that. Listen, you adulterers, you're cheating on your Savior. You're not being faithful and loyal to him because you're dipping your foot in everything else in the world. And James says that. But in verse 6, this is what he says. After he says, guys, come on, stop fighting. Stop setting your affections on things of this world. You got to change. But he says in verse 6, but he giveth more grace. He giveth more grace. Wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud. The arrogant, those who think they don't need any help. He resisteth the proud, but he giveth grace unto the humble. He giveth grace unto the humble. You may feel this morning like a Christian failure. Always striving to be better. Always striving not to mess up. To not miss the mark, to make everybody happy, to make everybody proud, even to make God proud. And you try and you try and you try and you try and you continually feel like a failure. We fail so often, even with a heart that desires to serve God, that desires to honor God, that desires to obey his word and obey his command. And yet we fail so often. We make a choice. I'm going to be more patient with my family. And then we lash out in impatience. Certain situation drives us to, man, we just lose our temper. We strive to show more grace to the people around us and in our lives, yet we get cynical because we've seen too much or we've been burned too many times, and we struggle to show grace in those moments because of our cynicism. We try to give something up to get over an addiction, but we continually crawl back to it and we feel like a failure. You've been there, I've been there. And yet, through it all, God gives more grace. He giveth more grace. He helps us grow. He continually forgives us. He is still waiting on the porch for us to come walking back. He runs out to us and wraps his arm around us and says, welcome home. Let's have a party. That's our God. He gives grace for the mistakes. He gives grace for our weaknesses. He is our strength in our weakness. Jesus said, my grace is sufficient for you. My grace is enough for you. Listen, church, It takes humility to grow. It takes a humbling. God sanctifies us. He sets us apart. He takes our hearts that are humble, because God resists the proud, but he giveth grace to the humble. He takes those humble hearts and he makes them more like his heart. He gives grace to the humble. He is the God who gives grace. So don't give up on the Christian life because you messed up. So often we hear, I just can't toe the line. I just can't do it. Listen, nobody's perfect. You've heard the great quote, the ground is level at the foot of the cross. We're all a mess. Okay, we're all a train wreck in our lives. We make mistakes. We sin often willingly. We know we're not supposed to do something, and yet we do it anyway. And God gives grace for that when we humble our hearts. So keep getting up. Keep plodding on. When you fail, dust yourself off and keep moving forward by the grace of God. Rome wasn't built in a day, was it? No. So why would we expect when we get saved for us to just be the perfect picture of what a Christian should be? No way, man. Grace won't finish its work until we stand before God one day. So here in the here and now on this fallen earth with our broken souls, may we receive the grace that God has for those mistakes. May we receive the grace that God gives freely for the times when we mess up. We need to be open. We need to be honest. We need to be transparent. Yes, yes, and yes. We need to call ourselves out often. We need to receive correction from people that love us. Yes, all those things with humility. Because humility brings us to growth. If nobody can tell you anything, that's your problem. If you can't hear a word that someone has to say about you in love, that's a problem. If when the pastor's preaching and you're getting ticked off, that's a problem. It takes humility to grow. And God gives grace for sanctification. He gives grace for it. And lastly, this church. God gives grace for salvation, for sanctification, and God gives grace for tribulation. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 6 says this, humble yourself, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Verse 7 says, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. Whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. Verse 10, But the God of all grace, who hath called us unto his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after that ye've suffered a while, make you perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you. He gives grace for tribulation. In my darkest days, in my own sleepless nights, in my own broken moments, his grace finds me. When life gets too heavy, when prayers go unanswered for a time, when I am overwhelmed, his grace finds me. His grace finds me. His grace found me and my wife as we stumbled through those early years and those early months of our son's autism diagnosis. We didn't know left from right. Unsure, unprepared, scared, and unaware of what the future held. When dreams were crushed, when we mourned our vision of what life we thought was supposed to look like, his grace found us. His grace visited us time after time and night after night in church. His grace will find you. It will find you. Don't lose hope.
Don't get cynical. Don't get apathetic. Don't get callous. What a danger it is to get callous. Lean into this season of life, wherever it is for you, and let His grace roll over you and lead you to the rock that is higher than I. When my heart is overwhelmed, His grace finds me. There's a purpose, there's a plan for every part of your story. He's the God who gives grace. He's the God who gives grace for every part. He's the writer of your story. He knows the hard chapters and the easy ones, and He's with you through it. So because of the grace that you have been shown, because of the grace for salvation, for your eternity, for your secure eternity, the grace for your sanctification, He's making you more like Him through every trial, through every heartache, through every mistake, and the grace for tribulation, for those trials of life that He pours onto us, because of the grace, church, that you have been shown, start showing grace to those around you. My goodness, church, we're children of God. We're the church. We should be the examples of those who show grace. And yet so often, from the world's perspective, and when people look at the church and those who call themselves Christians, it is us who show the least grace. It is us who show the least patience and love and compassion. May we be the example of Christ to the world. Showing grace, yes, to the lost world, but showing grace to each other. Jesus said, how are they going to know you're my disciples? By your love one for another. Show grace to those around you, to the prodigals, to the older brothers who think they got it all together. The Pharisees, the weaker brother, show grace because of the grace that you've been given. Show grace to those that God has placed in your life, those with children, those in marriages, in your workplace, your neighbors. Show grace to those around you. He pours grace into us so that we can pour grace into those around us. Let the grace of God that has changed your life change the lives of those around you. Thank you again for listening to the Coastline Baptist Church podcast. We hope the message was an encouragement to your heart. Please connect with us through our website, coastlinecc.org, or on Facebook or Instagram. Send us a message, send us an email, and we'd love to connect with you. We'd also love if you could visit us for a Sunday morning service. You can find our address on our website, and our services start at 10 a.m. Our mission at Coastline is simply this: to know Jesus deeply and to show Jesus daily. I hope that we've helped you do that in your life today. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.